Hi, and welcome to another episode, edition of the Toncast. Which one do you prefer?
I actually like edition.
So it's
it edition. Sounds like a it sounds like newsworthy.
Yeah,
it's an edition.
Well, we've got some big news today coming from you, which I found out. I thought this was you said come do my podcast, and then, and then you told me when I got here that it's me interviewing you.
Yeah, you're the host.
Yeah, I'm the host.
You're the host.
So. Not what I am normally used
host
to doing.
Host Jonathan Mangum is what,
Okay.
Yeah, you're the host, and I'm the very special guest.
Like, so if I was normally to host something, I would come with a prepared list of questions to ask, but now...
Well, you don't need to prepare. You're an improv guy.
Okay, all right.
You're Who's Lying? What do you need to...
I am Who's Lying.
You don't need to know what's going on. You just walk right. out there.
All right, so are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. First question. we'll do a free association. I'm going to say any random word, and then you say free association.
Okay.
Bird.
Free association.
Camel.
Free association.
Aardvark.
Free association.
You're really good at this.
Yeah, I nailed that. Can I be on Who's Line?
That was my audition.
I was like, if I was super famous, I could be on Who's Line as one of the super famous people who's not really good at it.
Yeah, there's some of those, aren't there?
Well, they're always game, and it's funny, you know, in a way, but you can tell they're like, oh, God. You can tell panic is happening.
Yeah, some of them are game, and some are not. They're not game. Some people are, like, surprisingly good you wouldn't expect.
But okay, you don't have to drop a name unless you want to. But, like, give me an example of, you don't have to tell me who it was, but, like, what happened? What was...
I'm trying to think, like, Rob Gronkowski, the quarterback for a sports team.
You wouldn't expect a sports person to be bad at improv.
Well, you wouldn't expect them to be funny, right? Mm-hmm. You expect them to be like, I'm going to say something loud. But he was actually saying funny bits. I'm like, whoa. Which kind of diminishes us. Like, we've worked 20 years to be funny, you know? And then here comes this guy. He's like, oh, no, I dabbled in comedy. Funny joke. And you're like, what? No.
No, stop it.
I can't even throw a football. Next question.
All right.
Boxers or pedophile?
You mean boxers, the...
Just answer the question.
Oh, boxers, I guess.
Okay, I'm going to ask you again, Todd.
Uh-oh.
No, that's correct. That's correct.
That was the correct answer. I didn't know if you meant boxer, like Creed, Rocky type of deal, or boxer shorts.
I meant
shorts.
The shorts. A riff on the boxer or brief thing, and then I backed you into a corner of being a terrible person.
That's good. That's happened on this show before.
Yeah.
I think the worst example was someone launched with... so I'm here to talk about your work in eugenics. And I was like, okay, yeah. You got a yes and that, I guess.
You got a yes and?
Yeah.
So how you've been married for a while now? How long have you been married?
15 years. Just actually had my 15th anniversary yesterday.
And what is the 15 year? What is the thing that you give on that time?
I looked that up.
Yeah.
And it's diamonds.
So how many diamonds did you get your wife?
I got her zero diamonds.
Zero diamonds.
But I did buy her an Xbox One console.
Oh.
Just so she could have Rock Band 4.
Rock Band 4.
Because we happened to be, I think, at Target.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, Rock Band 4. I like Rock Band. I'd like Rock Band 4. And I was like, well, we have an Xbox 360. It's not compatible with our system. And she was like, oh.
Then you surprised her.
And then I surprised her and spent a lot of fucking money.
Do you play the Rock Band stuff?
I've played it before. It's been a long time. Yeah. So I set it up yesterday. I'm not a video game. I'm not a gamer
at
all.
At all.
Which is odd given how many Gamergate people follow me on Twitter.
Sure.
Like, my Twitter feed is, like, I followed some of these people back early on, so sometimes my Twitter feed is just filled with this hateful anti-feminist bile. And I don't, like, I...
You should stop liking when you...
Yeah, and retweeting.
Yeah.
It's like, I get shaky, like, I'll have too much coffee, and then I'll accidentally hit the wrong thing. I think about that. I think about unfollowing or just blocking or something.
Right.
But then I don't, because then I'm like, shouldn't I know what people I disagree with are talking about and thinking about?
Yeah.
It's a way to get news.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's extremely aggravating to me, but I mean, I don't get into it because there's no point in getting into it.
Do you ever accidentally follow someone? This happens to me a lot. I don't know how. I'll get a tweet and it'll say, someone will go, "Hey, I'm so excited that you're following me now." And I'm like, what? I didn't click follow. This has happened like 5 or 6 times. But then I feel like I can't unfollow them now and be...
Because they were excited.
They were excited. But then you see things like, going to donut shop today, wearing my fun hat. And I'm just like, oh, I don't... Actually, that would be good. I'd like to be there.
That's actually a good tweet.
No, but then like lots... I try to think of something funny to tweet. If I don't have something funny, or if I'm not promoting something, I'm not gonna just say I'm walking around.
Right, right.
And some of these people just like every 15 seconds they're saying what they're doing, and it's like, oh man, yeah. God, I don't want to.
Yeah,
don't tell me what you're doing.
Yeah,
right. All every second.
Yeah. Well, and it's like one of the guys who I wound up following, who is a Gamergater, like constantly retweets all the Gamergate shit.
Yeah.
So I'll have like 15 tweets in a row that are all this Gamergate nonsense.
Yeah.
It's very odd.
Well, no games, so sports, or what was your thing?
Mostly masturbating and doing theater.
Right.
I mean, when I was a kid.
Right. Why are there towels over all the furniture in here? That's part of the masturbating?
I still have a bit of a chronic problem.
That's
it's disgusting. I apologize.
It's all right.
But I had a hard time setting up.
Hard.
Setting up the thing, because I didn't know how to work the Xbox One,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know how to connect the wireless instrument, you know, things to the... It was very frustrating.
And Microsoft is notorious for, okay, you want to sign up an account? All right, put in your email. Okay, put in a password. Now set up a password for your kids. Now go to your computer. There'll be a 12-digit code. Punch that into your Xbox and then run back to your computer and hit accept. Then when you read the email, it's just like, wait, I'm lost.
Why? Yeah.
I'm in the kitchen. How did I get in the kitchen?
Yeah, that was the other thing, trying to add, because I just set it up with my name and had to set up the email.
Right.
Like, now I have an Outlook email account
mm-hmm.
that I'm never going to fucking look at, except when I'm working on this stupid Xbox.
Right.
Which I only got to play Rock Band. But my kid's
which
happy.
You only got to make your wife happy.
Right.
For the 15th anniversary.
Well, and it made my kid happy, because he's wanted some Xbox One games, but we only had the 360, so...
I was going to ask if you did something, but you're not a gamer. But Battlefield, the Star Wars Battlefront, had a brief period where you could play it for free last month for a weekend.
Oh, really?
And so my kids and all the kids, their friends, all downloaded it to play it. And you get to be Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. How is that not exciting to you? I don't understand how you can't be excited by that. You're a film buff.
Yeah, that's
true. You get
to be
true. Luke Skywalker.
But, you know, video games, honestly, you know, when I play them, they stress me out. Like, we were finally set up the Rock Band.
Yeah.
You know, and I tried the guitar and the drums, took turns, and I find it very stressful.
Oh, it is? That's why it's fun. Stress is fun, right?
Yeah, no. No.
That's why we're actors, because stress is so much fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I just never... I mean, I played the Atari 2600 when I was a kid, when that first came out. I played those games.
Yeah.
Because everybody was doing it. And it was so unbelievably new to have video games that you didn't have to go to an arcade to play.
Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to fit in. But then eventually I realized I prefer just sitting and watching movies.
Sure.
Which can be stressful in its own way if the movie's effective.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's less responsibility, I guess, for me. Because when you're playing the game, you're responsible for what happens to your avatar in Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, stuff like that.
You don't like the responsibilities?
I don't like responsibility. I have decided that, for sure.
Tangent.
Uh-huh.
You're an author. you've written a book, which I have read.
Yeah, you read
called Don't Act Right.
Yeah,
101 Don't Act 101, or is
it's called Don't Act 101 Reasons, 101 why, you
reasons
shouldn't.
Why You Shouldn't Act. And it's a very funny book.
Oh, thank you.
I suggest the listener pick up a copy.
You're giving this podcast a lot of credit out of the gate.
Yeah, but I remember reading that, and I remember just really laughing, and then sharing the pain of many of those auditioning circumstances. What's the story? You went to somebody's house and had an omelet, and you...
Oh, it was John Stamos.
John Stamos, and he's showing you how to make an omelet and telling everyone this is going to be a hit and you're all going to be famous, and then they didn't get picked up, but just that moment of being in his house and watching him cook an omelet.
Yeah, he was cooking it specifically for me.
Oh, he made it for you, that's right.
Yeah, because he was making some shellfish, which I didn't eat at the time, because... My sister used to eat a lot of shellfish, and then she developed an allergy and almost killed her. And I never really liked shellfish, so I would just tell people, "Nah, I'm allergic." So that way, it wasn't, you know, being completely rude that I don't want to eat your food. And he was like, "Oh, well, I'll make you an omelet." And I felt kind of bad because I was lying.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just didn't want to eat shrimp, and he made me an omelet. Wow. I was like, "Oh, thanks, John Stamos." Yeah. And then his house was awesome, but he had like a whole tavern in his house, you know, a bar with a pool table and like TVs for sports. It was like a real, and it was really nice. It wasn't like the dive bars you go to in the valley. It was fancy. It was in a mahogany bar and stuff on tap. And so we were
on tap in a house.
In a house.
It just seems weird. So bizarre to me.
I think it's great.
It is great, but
although I would never leave the, I would probably just become a woeful, awful alcoholic if I just had a bar in my house. It's like it'd be 10 a.m. I'd be like, "Fuck it, I don't have anywhere to go. I don't have auditions today. I'll pull a beer." So we got drunk with Stamos, and we started shouting at each other about the movie Titanic.
Oh man,
it was kind of fun. You know,
what was the argument?
He thought it was great, and I thought it was a piece of shit. That was basically it.
Yeah, I didn't really care for that movie too much.
No, I didn't, and I was trying to express why, you know, I didn't like it, which was, you know, one, I thought it was essentially just another disaster movie.
Yeah.
And I normally like disaster movies, but they're not... While they're based in actual... you know, natural disasters often that could happen. They're fiction.
Yeah.
And there was something creepy to me about watching. I mean, the whole set, you know, it's too long for a disaster movie. Titanic is, but that's the setup. You meet all these frigging characters. They all get on the boat. You get into the cheap, you know, sentimental drama, you know, Billy Zane running around being, you know, all that crap. You know, and then it's, you're just waiting for the iceberg to hit the boat. I mean, that's what you're waiting for.
Yeah, if you know it's coming, there's no, you can't know the story ahead of time or you're just bored, right?
Right. I mean, well, but it's like, if you go to a disaster movie, like a Roland Emmerich film, like you go to 2012, you know the world's going to get wrecked. That's what you're basically going to see. And if they can cast a charming actor like John Cusack to kind of get you through, so much the better. But you're there to watch destruction. So Titanic is a movie about an actual disaster where people actually died in these horrific ways.
Yeah.
You know, if they weren't immediately drowned, then they froze to death in the water. Like, and knowing that it was real, and you're waiting to watch... I mean, you say what you will. Say you go... People didn't really go for the romance or whatever.
Right.
You go... And I know, you know, teenage girls got into the romance and all that. And that's why they liked it. And part of the reason it was a big hit. But everyone went to see the Titanic sink. And it creeped me out. And I resisted it. I was like, I feel like this is a tasteless exercise, really.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like... I don't, you know, it's a real life disaster. People really died. It's weird. Like if you made a Rambo movie where Rambo goes back in time and saves a trainload of Jews from concentration camps.
Right.
That would feel tasteless, right? And while Titanic is not, you know, the Titanic disaster is nowhere on line with the Holocaust. I just used that example because it's a real life horrible thing. And it, you know, and they touched on the class issues in the movie and how like the poor people were the first to die and they were locked into their, and that's, but I mean, if the movie had been all about that, maybe it would have had more of a point, but it was just like a sentimental romance, and you knew that was happening in the background.
So it was more about the confluence of a romance and history together, kind of, it felt like two genres that shouldn't be coming together.
Yeah. And just, I don't know, just making a disaster movie about something that really happened made me, I had a hard time enjoying it.
Right.
And there were a lot of, like, cheap jokes in it. Like, Kathy Bates is out on one of the few lifeboats that got out, and she's watching it sink and people falling off the back of the thing into the to their deaths. And she says, well, there's something you don't see every day.
I don't remember that.
That she said that. And that, like, and I had resisted seeing this movie. And then my father-in-law was like, it really is great. I'll pay for your tickets to go see it at the Man Chinese. And this is like months into its run. And the thing is, the Chinese theater was still sold out, which is kind of amazing. So I go, you know, got pushed into seeing it, saying, I think this movie is this. And they're like, no, you're judging it too harshly. You don't understand it because you haven't actually seen it. And then I saw it, and it was exactly what I said it was.
So the sinking of the Titanic was a cause, in a way, of you sinking with your relationship with Stamos. It's kind of affected.
It did.
Many years ago, and this happened, and then cut to recently, and it sunk your... You were arguing and yelling with a man who you were...
Who made you an eggs, omelet.
Drinking his beer in his house. And you couldn't just say, oh, it was fine.
No, I mean, I was much younger then. I'm much better about that. Like, my opinions. I will keep them to myself quite
a
bit.
Oh, I'll just lie. Great show. You did a great job.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's hard.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's hard. I still do that. I feel like I've mostly aged out of going to people's, you know, theater shows.
That's tough, man.
But every now and then someone will do something and I'll be like, they're like, it really would mean a lot if you'd come, and I'll go.
Yeah.
And then...
It's tough.
And then I wait after the show so they know that I cared enough to show up. But then I have that awkward conversation. It's like, congratulations.
Oh.
You did it.
But they see. So I'm imagining that I did the show and you came and saw it. And I hear you say, congratulations, you did it. And then I'm like, oh, thanks. And I get in the car with my wife and I go, that fucking dick. He said, you did it. I know what he meant. That it sucked. No, honey, you were great. So, but I always just say, great, great show. Steve Martin does a funny bit where he talks about, he'll start to say, he was in the same spot, he saw something, it was, so he goes to say it's good, and he realizes maybe that's not strong enough, so he switches to great. So he'll be like, that was great. Great.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, okay, so you can do that.
Yeah.
Right, and maybe that's all people want. They want the validation. But that's another thing I say. If people call up and they're like, hey, I want, will you come to my show? And I'll say, yeah, sure, but be honest with me. Is this a show you think that I will get something out of?
Right.
I will like. Is this up my alley?
Yeah.
You know? And if it's not, and you're just, you want my validation, I can give that to you now.
You're going to do a great job. Is that what you want?
Yeah, you're great. You're great. You're great. Like, if you are in some piece of garbage,
right?
You know, I already know you're great. I've seen you be great. I can tell you you're great. I watched all the episodes of you on the what was it, the Tonight Show?
The Late Late Show.
The Late Late
Thank
Show.
Thank you. Wow, thanks, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
It was great.
Thank you.
You guys did great together.
Thank you.
Why aren't you the guys now?
I wish we were.
How did that work? Was it I know it was just guests, and they kind of made a thing. It were just guests. This doesn't mean anything.
You know, the new guy was coming in.
James...
The British guy.
And
so they had a month in there, a month or so, where they had to, Craig was done, and they had to fill people. And they thought, it's a publicity stunt, and we can fill it with CBS people. So
I see.
You know, a bunch of people from CBS came in that spot, and Wayne was one of them. He did it for a week. I think Drew Carey did it for a while. And Wayne's the most loyal guy. I mean, I've known him for 20 years, and just about everything, he's like, hey, put Jonathan in here.
Put him in there.
Yeah. So, when we work well together. So it was really fun. And it was the crazy thing to me is that you know, I love working with Wayne, and I love doing the game show. But it has, there's a certain vibe that goes with game show. Like,
sure.
Like late night, oh, super hip, cool late night.
Right.
Game show is daytime, it's a different thing. But we get twice as many viewers as the Late Late Show gets.
Right.
It doesn't even matter. It's just like the hipness of, ooh, late night, yeah, yeah, it's fucking hip, yeah, and party time. Oh, daytime, you know, it's a different beast, which it is, but still, twice right. as many viewers.
Yeah.
Why is this celebrated? I mean, I get it. It's just sometimes frustrating to me.
Yeah, that makes sense. Were you nervous going into that a week?
No, not really.
So you've been working with Wayne long enough that you're pretty mellow about the stuff you
yeah,
do.
Yeah, we work really well together.
What about Whose Line when you did that? Is that just like chill? You just walk in? You're
no,
just having fun?
It's not. It's Whose Line is it was really fun. I've been literally trying to get on it for 20 years. So
so it's a dream come true.
Yes, it actually was.
Yeah.
But it's tough because it's like this game. You're gonna stand here. You're gonna stand here. You're gonna stand here because it's the cameras have to be ready.
Right.
So
right.
It's much less. Do whatever you want improv and more about stand here, you'll go, and I know that I have about 10 seconds to get a joke out because then Colin is playing the next guy and then Ryan's after him, so it's like it's still improv, but it's very, you have windows, and it's more based on individuals than teams, which is what
so, yeah.
improv.
I wonder about that. I mean, the British version.
Yeah.
It had a very different vibe.
It felt theatrical.
Than the American.
It had a very theatrical.
Well, and it felt like there was like stuff. I don't know how much stuff on the American version winds up
right.
like on the cutting room floor,
mm-hmm.
and also the British version. Like sometimes, you know, they would air, you know, games or whatever that didn't go that well.
Yep.
And in the host who would make fun of the failure, that was sort of the fun. I mean, I think the fun of watching these kind of improv shows is knowing that this shit can go south.
Yes.
That's sort of the excitement as an audience member. Is
yeah.
like, oh, you know, this could blow up in their faces.
It's good to see someone fall off the tightrope every now and then.
Yeah, because then it, you know, it,
yeah.
it raises the stakes for yep. the games.
Yep.
Yeah. But in the American version, like, are there things that go south that get cut out? Or?
There are. I mean, I'd say two-thirds of it goes on TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's a good third where you're like, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, and it's not always because something was bad. Sometimes it's just because it went on too long and you can't really edit it, or something else happened, or it's too similar to one of these other games, so we can't put these two back-to-back.
Right, right.
I mean, on that show, rarely have I seen, when taping it, anything that just died. Nothing ever dies. Everyone there can say something, can talk funny and say funny things.
Uh-huh.
But it's just, it's more about what works together for this,
right.
this episode.
Do you ever do the live one that they,
I have sometimes. Well, there's like different groups that have branched off from Whose Line. So there's one called Who's Live, and that's Ryan Stiles, Greg Proops, Jeff Davis, and Chip Esten.
Okay.
And then Colin Mockery and Brad Sherwood do their own two-man thing.
Uh-huh.
And then Wayne and I do our own two-man thing.
Oh, okay.
So we all have separate
Isn't
groups.
A Murray brother involved
oh,
in
Oh, yeah.
One
Joel Murray is now doing Chip's part because Chip went and became a famous country guy on Nashville. He's craziest story.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Because Proops mentions this on his podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Chip, who's super funny, was a groundling, and he's you know, that guy that you hate because he's funny and good-looking. You're like, oh, fuck that guy.
Asshole, yeah.
But he's great and super nice. And we were coming back from Vegas one time. We were doing shows there with Drew and a bunch of people. And Chip goes, hey, can you guys want to listen to this country song I wrote? And we're like, oh, what is this? This is like 5-6 years ago. And he goes, well, I wrote this country song, and I sent it down to Nashville, and you pay money, and then a band and a singer records it.
Uh-huh.
And sends it back to you, and then it's kind of your songwriter's demo. Will you listen to it? We're like, yeah, sure. And there was a couple songs in there, and it was really good. And he said, he just sighed and went, man, all I want to do is be a country music star. And then 2 years later, Nashville. And then Nashville is using his music, and now he's out touring as a country music singer. How fucking cool is that?
That is really
yeah.
cool.
And he's a nice guy, so I'm happy for him.
That's great. That's crazy. That's a very interesting
yeah.
Shift. Because usually it is TV shows don't make music stars.
Yeah.
They try.
Yeah.
Like Don Johnson.
Heartbeat, wasn't that his name?
Yeah. Yeah. And Eddie Murphy tried it.
Yeah.
And didn't, what's his name, who played Tubbs on Miami Vice?
Didn't he? Jan Michael Vincent?
No, that's Erwin.
Tubbs.
Tubbs, the black guy.
Yeah.
He had an album.
We don't think
too.
Of his name in 5 seconds, we're racist.
Yeah. It's not
three names, isn't it?
It's three names.
No. Philip Michael Thomas. Yes.
Yeah,
Philip Michael
it.
Thomas.
Right.
Right?
Philip Michael.
Jan Michael Vincent.
Philip Michael Thomas. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
There, we did it.
Yeah.
We did it. Jan Michael Vincent. He's great.
So. You're the Worst is a show that you are on
mm-hmm.
television with. It's in its third season.
Second season. Yeah.
What is that like? How awesome is that, by the way?
It's really awesome for a lot of reasons. I mean, one, Steve Falk, yeah. who you know, because you've done the Film Pigs web mm-hmm. series. It's his thing. It's
yeah.
his baby. So it was just cool. I mean, the pilot episode. I only had two written lines, and my character's name was Groom. I didn't even have a name. And all I was there was to throw the lead guy out of a door and tell him to go to hell. That's all. And then I ad-libbed one line, which Steve does not care for ad-libs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, he's a writer, so he's like...
Well, and he's, it's funny. He's vehemently against improvisation in, what is essentially scripted entertainment.
Sure.
Like, he doesn't like movies where it's clear, there's just a string of ad-libs.
Mm-hmm.
For example, he didn't care for Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer movie.
Okay.
I didn't really like it either, to be honest, for the same reason. And I love Schumer's TV show, but that movie and, like, the Apatow thing, it's like... They have the plot and they have the story and they hit all the beats, but then the movie's stretched out because they do all these ad-libby things
mm-hmm.
that sort of can derail the pacing, one. And two, it's like there was a number of points in that movie where it was just, it was like John Cena or whatever doing like four or five different ad-libs that were just like cut together. And it kind of felt like these are all the possible takes for that one joke line,
weird.
And then they just jam them all together because they, whatever Apatow or whoever couldn't let go of all these hilarious lines,
wow.
And they probably would be fine as a DVD extra.
Yeah,
it'd be fun to see, but when it's jammed into the movie, it's like if the bit isn't working for you as an mm-hmm. individual, then it's like we're really driving this thing into the ground
yeah.
because I didn't like it, in the line. So Falk really has it riles him up.
Well, you're very funny in the part you do.
Thank you.
I think it's great that you only had one line in the pilot and that you came that way, because if you had five scenes that whatever network would have said, yeah, we'll make them test. We know you want them, and we know
yeah,
he's good,
yeah.
but we got so and so, and we got, don't you think that?
Well, so many agents now too. I was talking to one the other day, and he's like, yeah, I said, are you gearing up for pilot season?
Yeah.
Because I don't go out on pilots anymore.
What do you
anymore.
Say to an agent?
What
are
you?
So, are you...
Yeah, were you gearing up? Yeah. And he was like, no. And I was like, no? And he's like, no. I mean, we could spend all our time reading scripts and try to find parts to push our clients on, but the fact is... It's usually offer only at this point.
Yeah.
And to do all that work is pointless. What we look for our, not famous clients mm-hmm. is the recurring guest stars. Because you have a better shot of becoming a series regular yeah. over time through the back door than going through the testing thing. Because chances are they got an offer
yep.
out and they're just doing the tests so they have leverage. to say, well, we're testing all these people. Is, you know, she going to take the role or not?
Yeah.
And then they're like, yeah, she'll take it.
Wow. Know?
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm still just a guest star on the show.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, so.
But you're on quite often.
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky, I think, to my ad lib that they cut in. On the day, my ad lib made all the network people laugh. And Falk came over and said, you're an asshole. You ad lib, you got the biggest laugh from the suits on this pilot. I was like, sweet.
Nice.
So I think that kind of helped him solidify. And, and they just. The interesting thing about my character is, of all the characters on the show, it's probably the broadest and silliest character. So they have fun, like, writing the absurd stuff for me.
Sure.
And it's, like, grown. It's just fun. I mean, I think that's the ideal place for an actor to be, is have a writer's room who, like writing for you and your character. And this is the first time that's happened to me on a show that's actually critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
Because it has happened to me in the past. Like, very early in my career, I did the show called Nikki that nobody watched, but it wasn't a very good, it was a really dumb show.
It was a UPN or?
Yeah, UPN. Yeah, it was Nikki Cox. It was really fun to work on, but, nobody watched it, and the critics hated it and all that. But it was so much fun for me because they were writing more and more stuff for my character to do, just because they had fun with it the first time.
And another interesting bit of trivia for our moms, which are probably the only two listening right now, is we both went in for Arrested Development for the part of
Will Arnett.
Yeah, we both went in for that and got to meet redhead
Ron Howard.
Ron Howard, thank you. I thought you knew what I meant, but fishing pole
of Ron Howard.
That was exciting to
get. It was exciting, but it was a kind of a rough experience for me though, because I went in for the producers and they were like creaming over my performance. They were like, nobody has hit every beat that we've written so precisely. I was like, oh, great. Thanks. So then when they tested me, I of course went in to do the same thing again. And wow.
It's
I walked through the door before I opened my mouth and the room went fucking cold.
That happened. People that aren't in the business don't realize the hurdle after hurdle after hurdle after hurdle, audition after audition. And then, so I've experienced that too, where you're doing it and they're dying laughing, and then you go to the final thing and you've done nothing yet. You haven't even brought your vibe to the room. You're a friendly guy. Like, you haven't even turned that. Like, you're just entering and heads down, quiet, death, murder.
Right. Yeah, it was like out of the gate. I'm like, I haven't even done anything yet.
Yeah.
Part of the... Will Arnett wasn't even there on the day that I tested.
That's so weird.
Because they tested me and French Stewart.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And French Stewart went before me. And I'm hearing through the walls this gales of laughter.
Coffee.
Like warm reception, you know? And I'm like, oh, sounds like a great room. But when we switched, the room changed.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Here's a crazy story. It'll either depress you or make you feel good.
Okay.
So I've gotten to know Drew Carey over the years, and he put me on the Drew Carey Show, which was awesome. And then I went and toured with him doing improv, and we're great friends, and he's done so much for my career. So thank you. Before I knew him, there was a show. I forget what it was called, but it had some elements of improv, but it was scripted mostly. And I went into the producers, and Drew was not in there, but he was one of the producers. And I read, and they go, okay, great. And then I go, hey, you're testing for this. I'm like, oh, fantastic. So I go into this room with all the NBC people, and everyone's in there. And I read, and they laugh, and I do a couple improvs, and they laugh. And I say thank you, and I walk out thinking, okay, that went pretty good. And there's one other guy
who's
reading. But I did what I'm supposed to do, blah, blah, blah. I don't get it.
Sure.
Cut to 4 years later. Now I've known Drew. I've been on his show. We're out on the road together. And I start talking about auditions, just like the story we had. Like, sometimes you go in and it's just dead.
Right.
And Drew, he's starting to get a little...
uncomfortable?
Uncomfortable. And a little misty in the eyes there. And just, he's like, wow, I have to tell you something.
Uh-oh.
And I'm really sorry. And I go, what? And he goes, there's a term that we use in the business called the ringer.
Yeah.
We bring in who we want, and we bring in someone that's good, but not really right for the part.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 years ago, that show, that was you. We had no intention of ever hiring you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? Yeah. That shit happens?
No, it does. Oh. That's
now, I mean, every audition, every time I test, I'm like, oh, okay, who's the ringer? Is that guy the ringer? Am I the ringer? You know what I mean? It's in my head now. I wish he had never told me that shit.
I knew, yeah. I started realizing that when I was testing a lot, which I never do anymore, because I don't really go out on pilots very much anymore.
Right.
Like, the most recent series regular audition I had... It's like a few weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, shit, cool.
Yeah.
Series regular opportunity. Haven't had this in a while. And they're like, well, it's an independently produced pilot. I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever, you know. You don't get anything unless you show up.
Yeah.
So I'm reading the thing, the script, and I'm like, nah, you know, it's like a family-friendly, you know.
Right.
It's not... really my thing necessarily, but you know, whatever, series regular money.
Sure.
And then I get deeper into it, and then I get to the very end, and like the tag was all about Jesus and heaven being real, and like he's talking to his dead dad's ghost, and his dead dad's like, I'm proud of you, son, but don't get caught up in all this little stuff, because in the end it's about making things right with God and getting to heaven. And I was like, okay, this is weird. This is weird.
Wow.
So I called my agent. I was like, is this a like Christian propaganda
Kirk Cameron
thing? Yeah. And she was like, I don't know. Let me look into it. And then she looked into like who the production company was, and she called me back. She said, yeah, this is, that's what that is.
I was like,
I'm not.
That's terrible. What's the name of the part?
Well, it's just like, I can't. I mean, there's so much that I will do, but there's like a line that I have to draw. I've said no more in the last few months than I have in a long time, because I'm just like I got a script for an indie movie, you know, and you know, I was like, this is like, they made this same movie in the 90s,
yeah,
and this is an indie movie. And I'm like, if you're doing an indie movie, why are you redoing a studio comedy, like taking the studio comedy? And then, like, my part was nothing. And I was like, this is going to pay crap. And I'm like, there's no reason for me to do this. I just couldn't come up with a reason outside of just to do something. But it's like, if you're doing something and it winds up making you completely miserable doing it, mm-hmm, and you're not making money, and it's not going to add any, you know, real credit. It's like, I can't come up with a reason. Because when you're auditioning, you theatrically, I mean, commercially, it's a different ball of wax. You show up for the commercial audition, and you go in and do what they say, and then you leave, and it doesn't require anything except the commute,
mm-hmm,
and the sitting and waiting in the room and having energy and being professional and friendly.
Little bursts of energy.
Yeah, little bursts of...
All I have to do is 4 minutes of charming.
Right. And then I'm out. And I don't have to worry about it too much. But if theatrical, you got to understand the character and you got to know your lines. I mean, I know you go in with the sides and you can glance at them if you get lost or whatever, but you really got to know your dialogue. You basically have to learn a part.
You have to memorize. Even though they say don't, you got to memorize it.
Yeah, you got to memorize. You got to understand where you're going, where the scene's going, find the beats, find the rhythm. That's a lot of fucking work.
Don't forget, deal with the self-doubt and the, is this good? And like that on top of it, which is draining as hell.
Right.
Then you get up and then you drive there and then you wait. Oh, it's in Santa Monica. Okay, fine. And it's just like so much work and energy and thinking and overthinking for $100 a day for, you know,
for
a day and a half of
I was just like, no, I'm not. I can't give you that. I can't give you that.
I get it.
You can't have it. Can't have it. I'm not doing it.
Not doing it. You can't make me act.
You can't. I can say no. You know, and I usually call my manager and I'm like, okay, you're going to talk me into this if you think I should do it, you know. And he like did his best trying to talk me into it.
I want my $10 a day.
Yeah, but ultimately he was like, ah, you're right. You don't need to go. I was like, okay, yeah. I don't know. It's weird. But so You're the Worst is nice. But
yeah.
Yeah. Turns out not a lot of cachet out of it yet. We'll see.
How's it, is it doing well? It's one of their... I mean, it's getting a lot of press, which is great.
Yeah, it's critically acclaimed. Everybody who watches it loves it.
Yeah.
But it does... The numbers aren't huge.
Okay.
But they don't have to be, especially now that it's on FXX.
Mm-hmm.
And with FXX being such a new network and brand, that's what they're looking for, is they want the critical acclaim.
Yep. Oh, great.
So... Yeah, the numbers aren't as important.
Mm-hmm.
But you never... I mean, I guess the way they run things there, it's basically, if the critics love it, if one of three... You have to have two of three.
Okay.
Right? So you gotta... There's the critics, there's the numbers, and then there's the network.
Right.
Executives. So if two of those three... If you're good with two of the three...
Then you're in.
Then you're most likely gonna get picked up for another season. Which, I mean, that was true about It's Always Sunny in the beginning, and now that show's been on for, what, 11 years?
Do you watch It's Always Sunny?
I do.
You're one of the first people I know that watches that show.
I've always really liked it.
Yeah, I see the previews for it on things and the billboards. I go, oh, it looks like a fun, I gotta watch that. And I just haven't gotten to it. But no one I know, you are literally the first person I know that watches that show.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I did an episode of Hawaii Five-0.
Yeah.
And Alex O'Loughlin.
Sure.
I said, yeah, my wife and I watched this show. And he's like, really? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, never had a single guest star on the show who's watched the show.
Wow.
He's like, you're literally the first person who said I watched the
show.
But
you recommend it, is what you're saying.
Hawaii Five-0?
No,
Oh, It's Always Sunny. Yeah, I think it's...
You recommend your performance in Hawaii Five-0?
I'm great on Hawaii Five-0. I'll be honest about Hawaii Five-0. It's a network procedural.
Yep.
But unlike, a lot of them, it's sort of a throwback to 80s procedurals in a lot of ways. Because one, for the most part, it's standalone stuff. And now we have high-def TV. So it's like, it's Hawaii porn. Yeah. It's awesome. And everybody on the show is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I think, Scott Kahn and Alex O'Loughlin have a really nice repartee.
Yeah.
So is it silly? Yeah. Can it be really dumb? Yeah. But it's always fun, and it's breezy, and it goes by fast.
Yeah.
And they're constantly referencing Magnum P.I., and that's my favorite show of all time.
Oh, is it really?
They had Carol Burnett on the show because she was on Magnum P.I. They had Larry, forgetting his last name, the guy who played Rick.
Rick. Oh, wait. No, Rick, not TC.
Not TC, yeah. I can't remember. His
guy
name
that...
was Larry something.
Did he work at the King Kamehameha Club?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. And he was in with the mob and stuff and all
that's right.
So he's been on the
Who's
show.
The guy? Oh, Ice Pick was the guy at Ice the Pick. I love Magnum P.I.
Yeah, Magnum P.I. is great. I have all the Magnum P.I.s on DVD.
Yeah.
So if I'm in a bad mood, all I have to do
Throw in some Magnum.
Do a little Magnum binge watching, nice. And it puts me in a good mood.
Switching topics, you mentioned a while ago that to me that you do one of the P90X's, which is this workout
video. Yeah.
And you look to be in shape, and I know that you like beer, and I like beer, so you're still doing something, because neither one of us is fat, and I feel like we fight that always.
Oh, I'm fighting that.
Yeah.
It really helps to, do my web series.
Yeah?
Because, like, every few weeks I'll be like, oh, shit, getting jolly. time to cut back on the booze.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is always, that's all it is.
It's so good, though.
Yeah.
It tastes good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it pulls off that top layer of anxiety just enough that your kids are pleasant. The wife is friendly.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything could happen.
Life is good.
It's great. It's so great.
Yeah. That's true, but it really does pack on the pounds.
Man, it's really ridiculous.
Yeah. So I do not drink beer on the level that I used to. I can't because it gets right on there.
But you're doing the workouts?
I do. I did P90X.
Yeah.
And then P90X2.
Two,
I did
right,
the whole, like, the whole, you know, the regimented thing, and then you take a week off, and then you it switches up the workout. So I did both of those, but now what I'm doing is basically I do two of the, you know, weightlifting workouts that I essentially have memorized, so I don't do it with the tape anymore. Yeah. And then sometimes I'll do ply aside from P90X too. When it's either too hot or raining out. But then I'd rather go jogging.
Yeah.
Because it, for some reason, mentally, like when I have to do the P90X videos, it just feels like such a drag.
It does. I know exactly the feeling.
And I still get that feeling before I go jogging, like, fuck, I don't want to, I'm there, like, I'm not an exercise person.
Yeah.
I do it because I have to.
I am the exact same way.
There are people who love it, and you can tell they love it because they're in much better shape than me. And they're all about protein shakes, and they're watching what they eat. Yeah. And I watch what I eat to a degree.
Yeah.
Like, I basically, you know, 5 nights a week, I am trying to treat my body like a temple. Like, I eat good foods and stay away from the fat
bread.
And stuff. No bread and sugar and all that. But a couple nights a week, it's a tent.
Yeah.
I abuse the shit out of my body.
So good. I mean, and you have a kid, so you know every fucking birthday is pizza.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you're not going to eat salad at a kid's birthday party.
Right.
Right?
Well, and that's another thing I have to plan for, because if I get, like, for example, I was at a wardrobe fitting the other day.
Yeah.
And it was 4 hours.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, because you were waiting. When the director will be here soon, kind of thing? Or you have...
Well, it was... Yeah, they had me come in at 11:30, and by 12, I'd put on all the outfits that they had and taken all the pictures, and then they're like, it's going to be a few hours. And I was like, why?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, they started a pre-production meeting. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Like, why? If they're going to have a pre-production meeting, why don't they have me come into the wardrobe fitting later in the day? Which also would have been good for parking, because in their neighborhood, they needed us to park on the street, and it was all half the... It was all restricted and street
sweeping. This hourly pay, though, for wardrobe, right? Exhibit G?
Yeah, like winds up being like $74 an hour.
All right.
It's like you're guaranteed the $74 for the first hour.
Right.
This has got to be really riveting for our two moms.
Yeah.
And then it's every 15 minutes you get, so it winds up being... Yeah. Which is fine, you know. It's fine, but I'd rather not... I do commercials for the residuals, not the session fee, not the wardrobe fee, for the residuals.
So
I don't really care about overtime. I don't really, you know.
When did you start auditioning commercially in Los Angeles? What year?
96.
Okay. That's about when I started too. And you probably remember, like I do, some of the old dudes sitting around saying, remember when every commercial was $80,000?
Yeah.
Every commercial, you got paid $80,000, which... In the 90s is like $122,000. I mean, it's just like, and it seems like less and less and less and less.
Oh, it's way less.
Now it's just like, way less. Yeah, $2,000 for cable every 3 months. And
well, and I'm sitting at this thing for 4 hours, and they call me at 11:30, and it's getting to be 1, and I'm like, I'm hungry. Can I run out and get some food? And they're like, oh, no, we'll get you something.
Oh, so
and
you
what'd they get? Food.
Pizza.
Yeah. So I was like, glad, which I had the night before.
Yeah.
So I was like, ah, fuck.
You know how bulimics can just put their finger in their throat and vomit up? I wish that you could do the opposite, where you just put your finger in your ass and then just, so you get to enjoy it, and you just slip the finger in and it all comes out. Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be great.
I'm going to work on that.
Yeah. But
you mind leaving the room while I work on that?
Yeah. So, you know. And when you're working through a lot of time, it depends on what set you're working on, but sometimes, like, if you do a kid show, you know, the tweener shows, their caterers are always just awful.
Yeah.
They're all, like, hot dogs,
macaroni
and pizza, macaroni and cheese, kids' food.
Yeah.
Because the stars are the kids.
Yep. Yep.
And you're like, oh, Jesus Christ. And you'd, like, eat, like, a salad because. And we can't eat that garbage because I'll sit and get fat.
I'll bet you, though, that if you went to your high school alumni and looked at most of the dudes you went to school with, they're all... You're, like, the skinniest...
No, I always say that. Like, as you drive out of Los Angeles, you become better and better looking.
My wife and I go to the south side of Chicago, where she's from, and we are supermodels. We're just like the hottest people.
And it's a good feeling.
It is.
Like, hey,
how's it going?
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah. Not here.
No. It's weird. I definitely have developed kind of body dysmorphia as time has gone on. Well, because when I was young, I could eat anything.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it was like I had booked a couple national commercials at the start in my, mid-20s.
Yeah.
And was suddenly had money. So I suddenly wasn't drinking 40s of Budweiser. I was like, hey, I can go to a bar and order a pint of Guinness.
Oh, yeah,
a pint of Guinness. A proper pint of Guinness.
I'll have a Rolling Rock in the bottle, please.
That stuff is gross.
Yeah.
That's one of those beers. It's like when I was in high school, Rolling Rock was...
Yeah.
It was like...
It's the stepladder beer out of Milwaukee's Best, whatever.
Right. Then you're like, oh, Rolling Rock. Rolling. And you drink it now, and it's like...
Yeah, it's terrible.
Was it good back then? Because sometimes beers, like Sam Adams, when it was a microbrew, was actually really good.
Yeah.
And then when it became a macrobrew, it started tasting like Budweiser.
It's funny you say Budweiser. I was at a friend's house, and I opened the fridge, and there were cans of Budweiser. And I'm like, really? And he goes, try it. I'm like... It's been like 20, and I cracked it open and drank. It was delicious. It was really, like, not Bud Light, just Budweiser.
Regular Budweiser.
And I hadn't had, like, it was that feeling of, like, I don't know if your dad let you have a sip of beer when you were
kid. Yeah.
It was
that, it's that, nostalgic.
That, it was like, oh, it was nostalgia. It was,
that's what it is. It was really not good. It's nostalgia.
Maybe that's what
it's like having a fucking Big Mac.
Yeah.
Like, if you never ate a Big Mac and you're an adult and you have a Big Mac,
yeah.
I'll bet you're like, what the fuck? Yeah. Why am I not over at In-N-Out Burger? This is garbage. But because of the nostalgia, you know, it's like, And I think that's true, like, every now and then, you know. I know people who, that's what they drink.
Yeah.
They drink Budweiser, Bud Light. It's what they drink.
Yeah.
And they love it.
Yeah, I can't.
But I'll have a couple sips.
Yeah.
And when it's ice cold and you first crack it, It's really good. You're like, wow. And I think that's the nostalgia. But as soon as the temperature drops, even mildly, then it starts tasting like what it is.
Yeah.
It has to be stupid
ice cold. And if it's hot out.
I feel that way about Mexican beers, too. You know, like Heineken.
I don't like Heineken anymore. Used to.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I never really liked it, but...
For me, it's hard to drink something that's not... There's so many good beers on tap at so many cool places near where we all live in L.A.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, I could go get a Newcastle on tap, or I could get a Lagunista IPA.
Right.
It's just thick and delicious.
And there's so many good microbrews now.
Yeah,
like, next to where we shoot the Film Pigs web series, they opened up a microbrewery.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they have a tasting room. So we go have a beer before we shoot, and it's really good beer.
Wow.
And I'm like, why would I... But I think something happens, too, with microbrews, because, like, when Blue Moon was first introduced, I was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah.
But then it became a macro brew, and that, it doesn't taste as good.
No,
it doesn't. And I don't know if that's... Yeah, I do think it's something happens.
Yeah.
Microbrews are just better, I guess.
Yeah.
Although they go too far. I mean, I'm not crazy about, like, uber hoppy IPAs.
I like them. I like the
super some people hoppy. Like yeah. super hoppy. I'm not into super hoppy. I like a smoother situation.
About coffee, you drink coffee?
Uh-huh.
How much?
3 cups a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So morning, afternoon, evening kind of deal?
All morning.
Oh, so 3, boom, boom, boom in the
morning. I just, like, jam coffee into my gullet, and then I go. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
But if I drink it in the afternoon, then I won't be able to sleep.
Okay.
I know people who drink coffee before they go to bed. I'm like, how the fuck do you do that?
Sometimes I can do that.
People can.
I'm so used to it as a stream of constant. But then every once in a while, something will happen. I'll forget to drink coffee. I'll get a headache. But then, like, the next day, I'm like... I feel younger. I got energy. Like I think it's bad for you ultimately.
Yeah, it's hard to know because there's so many lobbyists dealing with that nutrition stuff. Like you know, one week it's coffee's killing you, and the next week it's you need coffee.
10 reasons why coffee helps you live longer.
Right.
Click.
Or like wine.
Yeah.
You know, a glass of wine a day. But then then the next week it's like. Wine is going to give you cancer.
Yeah, wine, yeah. One sip of wine. Well, they just, meat, all meats. Really, it just came out like 2 weeks
ago. Right, right.
All meats grass-fed or evil-fed, all going to kill you.
I prefer the evil-fed meats. The flavor is a little...
They feed it the rock from the Time Bandits microwave. They save some of that, and they feed it to the... It's evil!
This meat's got a nice kick. Yeah, nice evil kick.
How about, just a completely tangent, you're a movie buff, so I know you like Time Bandits, because it's it's amazing. Yeah. How about that for an ending of a movie for kids? That, where the parents die in the last second.
And then Sean Connery shows up again, and is just like, well, good luck!
Yeah.
And he's like, see you later, kid.
Did they not... I mean... I love that, because I've never seen anything like it, and as a kid I was like, what? Do you think they tested that? Do you think that people, the Gilliam just was like, this is the way, I would love to know the history of how that stayed in.
You know that's what happened. They were like, we can't do this, and he's like, we're doing it. Yeah. And he probably fought tooth and nail for it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because that guy's, he sticks to his guns.
Yes, he does.
For better or worse. Lately, just for worse.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the documentary called Lost in La Mancha?
About the making that they got? No, I did not, but that's on my list of things.
You gotta see it. It is probably the best, outside of the Apocalypse Now documentary, Hearts of Darkness.
That's amazing. I've seen that many times.
His wife made that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great documentary. So this is like a documentary about a movie that never got the... And watching Terry Gilliam go through it.
Wow.
And he hired these documentarians on 12 Monkeys, too.
Okay.
And he said, I want you to make your documentary about this. I don't care how it makes me look. Just shoot it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you watch on the DVD of 12 Monkeys or whatever, you watch that documentary, he does not come off well.
Wow.
I mean, he's difficult and crazy. And, you know, I love a lot of his movies.
Yeah, me too.
He's a real artist. And in La Mancha, it's the same thing. He does not come off well sometimes.
Wow.
But watching him trying to cling on to, like, there was, like, like, there was just everything. It's supposed to be a curse. Apparently, people in the past have tried to make this movie.
Heard that. Yeah, yeah.
And there's a curse, you know, because nobody can get it done. And that's what happened to him. I mean, it's like, you know, typhoons and lead actors dying and... It was crazy, and there's this one scene towards the end of it. This is not a spoiler, because it's a document. Like, watching it unfold, I can't do it justice. But, like, he the whole time he's fighting, no matter what happens, he's like, we'll get past this, we'll figure this out, and we'll do this in the interim, and and he gets, and every time, like, people are fighting, like, we gotta pull the plug on this thing, it's a nightmare, we gotta stop, and he's like, no, we're not stopping. And his first AD is constantly coming to his defense throughout the whole, you know, making of this movie. And then there's a scene in a parking lot where they've gotten, you know, Terry Gilliam's just gotten in another fight trying to keep this thing going, and this guy has been defending him the whole time, defends him again, but then takes him aside, and they capture it on camera. He's like, Terry, we can't do this anymore.
Wow.
And Terry Gilliam, like, part of what's great about watching him in these documentaries is whether he's difficult or crazy or not, it's like you can see the drive and the passion. And, you know, no matter how unpleasant he's doing, there's a certain amount of joy in his eyes about making these movies. And just like the unwillingness, like he will not give up.
Right.
You know, and that's why the Time Bandits has the dark ending, because he would not give that up.
Right.
You know, and Brazil's weird, and you know the whole story about Brazil, and the producers tried to cut it and make it like a funny, goofy Monty Python movie, and it was, you know, and he just fought to get it the way he wanted it. So to see him fighting to get this made, and then to see it just, in this moment, in this documentary, it just all drops. Like his face drains of passion.
Oh.
And you just see, like, crushing depression happen, and he's just like, yeah.
Well, this would be a tough question for a movie buff, because obviously, I mean, if you're not here, you can't see that there's, what, 1,000 DVDs lined up in your
Yeah, I got, now? Like, maybe 2,000 titles.
So you get to
told.
Take three with you to a desert island. Oh, let's not make it an island, let's make it a planet, a desert planet. So
that new planet that they found, that it's like... 36 light years away, but it has rocks.
Has rocks.
And the next generation of telescopes, they'll be able to tell if it has an atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
It's very exciting.
So that's where you're going with three of your movies.
Oh, boy.
And all other movies are forgotten from your memory. So you don't get to remember that you enjoyed Donnie Darko.
So, I did not.
See? You've already forgotten. So, three. Pick three.
Oh, God damn it. Well, I'm gonna bring John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Because that's...
Classic.
There's something I love about that movie.
It's amazing.
And it's weird because, you know, I am a feminist, despite all the gamer gators in my Twitter feed. But this is a movie, like, it's all dudes in the snow. There's something about it. There's something about the setting, and it's super creepy, and I just love the interplay between the macho interplay between dudes and then the non-macho science-y dudes who are, like, combating. There's something about the whole thing, and then the setting and the isolation and all that.
It's a masterpiece.
Yeah, I really love it. And then I'd probably bring Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah,
because it's
in my top
list. Like a perfect. I feel like I'm picking just kind of escapist.
But it's what you would bring. It's showing. Yeah, like, you don't have to be, you know, artsy fartsy or
right. And then because I love bad movies, I would have to bring Chud
as the palate cleanser.
Yeah, just to, like, have that bad cult film to, like, because let's say that this planet is inhabited by some other sentient being.
Right.
It might be fun to show them these great movies from my planet, but then here's this piece of garbage, and here's what, and we could do that Mystery Science Theater thing.
Sure.
You know, me and the aliens making fun of... Making fun. And Chud 2, the DVD is great because they have a commentary.
Did you say Chud 2 as in number 2 or Chud?
No, Chud 2, Bud the Chud is garbage.
Okay.
One, because it's not a Chud.
Right.
It's a zombie.
Oh.
Don't get me started on Chud 2, Bud the Chud. Actually, one of the film professors at NYU was the guy who directed Chud 2, Bud the Chud. And when people found it out, that would be the first thing. So what happened with Chud 2 by the Chud? And he's
while you're telling me about story structure, character art, should I bring up Chud 2? Should I?
So bane of that guy's existence. But so Chud has this commentary. It's my favorite movie commentary of all time. Well, no, Conan the Barbarian's pretty awesome, too.
The commentary or the movie?
The commentary.
Okay.
Well, the movie's fun,
yeah,
too.
Movies.
But it's Conan's fun because it's John Milius taking it seriously. He's, you know, uber comic book geek who became like this director, and he's being serious about all the filmmaking elements and the fantasy elements and the source material and all that. And then you have Schwarzenegger chomping on a cigar, saying things like, "I got laid a lot in this movie." You know, it's pretty hilarious. And you can sense Milius's frustration with that thing. So, Chud, the same way, they got... You know who's in Chud?
I know that there's Chud in Chud, but who else is in Chud?
So, you got your Daniel Stern.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Who runs a soup kitchen for the homeless.
Right.
And you got John Hurd.
Okay.
Famous character actor. Who, the last thing I saw him in was... it was called Would You Rather.
Oh.
It was like a horror movie.
Huh.
And then he was in the first Sharknado film.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, he plays like this drunk guy. I think he's actually kind of a drunk guy. But he plays a drunk guy in Sharknado. He's just at a bar.
What movie was he in that was really good recently with like Viggo Mortensen or something? And he was like a mafia boss and he was just kind of crazy behind the desk. What movie was that?
With Viggo Mortensen?
I thought it was Viggo Mortensen. Maybe one of those other tough guys.
Like,
and he was just,
I'm trying to think.
John Hurd, right? So he's kind of balding and kind of blonde on the sides.
Yeah, and he's big.
And he was playing this mafia boss character, and it was great. And I was like, John Hurd is great.
He is great.
Yeah.
He is great.
I'll try to remember what it is. Anyway.
Anyway, so he's in it, and then Kim Greist from Brazil.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Who I had such a crush on, and then she just kind of disappeared. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened to Kim Greist. So it's those two, and then this guy named Christopher Curry, who was in a lot of exploitation films in the 70s. It's the three of them, and then the writer and the director. of the movie,
right?
And all doing this commentary together, right. and the behind the camera team, they're like taking it seriously because, you know, it's become a cult film, and they're talking about, you know, here's how we did this and here's how we did this. But Daniel Stern and John Hurt are just ripping on the movie. Like, their Mystery Science Theater 3000, their own movie. Christopher Curry, who's not, you know, the championed actor that these two are, right, is trying to take it seriously. And every time he's like talking about like something he's doing in a scene, Daniel Stern and John Hurt will be like, what are you talking about? You were drunk when you were wasted when we shot this. And he's like, I was not drunk. I'm a professional. Like, and he's arguing. And as the commentary goes on, Christopher Curry slowly starts going, yeah, I was pretty lit when we shot this. And then the writer and the director just shut. They stop talking. And it's just Hurd and Stern and Curry just ripping.
That's amazing.
And there's a scene, like, it's great. Like, because they're acting,
right,
they're doing it,
yeah,
it's just, you know, and one of their things is, you know, it's actually not that bad a B movie until you get to the Chuds and their rubber monsters, and it's like, what is that? It looks really dumb. But there's a scene where they're freaking out. John Hurd and Daniel Stern are freaking out because they realize what's happening, screaming, and there's dead bodies everywhere, so they're like, ah, and like one of them grabs the other one to try and calm him down, and the other one starts and they start wrestling, and they get into like, they're actually on the ground with like Daniel Stern's on top of John Hurd, and it looks like he's trying to hump him from behind. And they're both talking like, what are we doing? Are we trying to fuck each other right now?
That's funny.
It's great.
That's really funny.
I highly recommend it.
Speaking of booze, have you ever had a sip of something before doing any performance for film or video or any?
Well, as you know, on the Film Pigs web series,
well, that, yeah,
we drink popcorn. Scotch as
popcorn.
We eat popcorn, yeah. Liquid popcorn. So we get lit doing that show. And when we have to do multiple shows in a row for whatever reason, like we did the other month, because we were in between guys and we couldn't do sketches, so we were just doing talking head shows. And we did four with Claire Kramer, who's one of the co-owners of Geek Nation. So we did four in a row. And by the fourth one, I mean the fourth one is hilarious. Because we're all so lit. Falk is like wandering around, like he wanders up to the camera. He's just staring into the camera. I'm like doing pratfalls for no reason.
Sure.
We're just lit. So, but that's a little different because the show has got that kind of camp element to it.
And also, you kind of own that. That's your show. So you're kind of the boss of.
It's like
the
a drunk history type of thing.
But I mean something else where you're just like, oh boy.
So I was doing a play at the ART in Harvard Square.
Right.
We were doing a series of one acts.
Right.
You know. So I was just in one of the one acts, but nobody was coming to the show.
Sure.
Like it was, you know, typical low rent theater.
Yep.
Like an audience of five or six, you know. And we were doing two shows a night because they were short. So we were doing two shows. Actually, it was a matinee and then, you know, on the weekend, we'd do a matinee and then a nighttime show. So after the matinee, nobody showed up. Nobody's coming to this show. And it was one of the last nights we were doing it. And me and my buddy were like, let's fucking get lit before we do this and see what that's like.
How old were you?
Because 23.
Okay. Sure.
So we went out and we got fucking hammered. We went to this bar that we knew where this hot, like Massachusetts, she was so hot, but she had this Massachusetts accent.
Oh, that's funny.
It was hysterical. And then she like kind of like, what were we were talking about? Doogie Howser. I can't remember why we were talking about Neil Patrick Harris.
Right.
This is well before he came out of the closet. And I can't remember what we were saying. We were comparing somebody to Doogie Howser.
Right.
You know, he's kind of got a Doogie Howser thing. And she goes, oh, like a fag. And we were like, oh, what? You know? It was like, oh, your hotness quotient just dropped. And we're like, he's not a fag. You know, and it turns out he's gay.
Yeah.
Not the right word for it. But it was interesting. So we got lit with her. This
Oh, nice.
Just drunk. And go to do the show. Sold out.
What?
Sold out! No, fucking sold out.
And so Did you remember the
lines? Oh, that's right. We did a matinee, and then we were doing two shows. So, yeah, I remember the line, but I was drunk and panicked as fuck because when I got there, they're like, we got a sold-out crowd. Isn't that great? And I'm like, no, I'm sure.
So even with being drunk, you were still panicked. That didn't
well,
take
the
that
drunkenness
off.
Made me panic because I was like, I thought we were... I would get to be drunk and it wouldn't matter because there would only be five people. There were 100 people there watching me drunk. And it was a comedy and it was fucking flat.
It was flat.
Oh, and I swear to God, in the middle of that, I stopped being drunk and I went into hangover.
Oh, man, that's the worst.
So then I was just hungover.
You need the water and just...
I felt terrible. And then did the second show. Five people. Killed.
The five people,
we killed. Is that your...
Yeah.
Oh, is that your... Do you have a...
It's a little commercial here for the Microsoft Band 2.
What is that?
iWatch or Apple Watch, except it's like half the price.
Uh-huh.
But it connects to your phone, so if it rings, I can't answer it on here, but I can see who's calling. I can pick an activity, like I'm asleep, I'm going to work out. Measures your heart rate, tells you how many calories you burnt. And it was free, so I'm loving it.
That's great.
Yeah,
I always wondered about those iWatches. I would have to wear it on the left wrist if I'm going to masturbate to pornography on the watch.
No, it shows pornography while you're looking at it, and it's got motion adjustment too, so it doesn't look like it's a flickering thing.
It's great that they worked out that technology.
They're good with that.
That's marvelous. Anyway, that was my drunk story. Have you ever gotten really drunk?
There was a movie I did, and when I say movie, that air quotes for people listening, called House at the End of the Drive. It was a horror movie. The guy that made it lived down the street from when the Sharon Tate murders happened.
Uh-huh.
And so, but he's sure his house is haunted because he's crazy.
Uh-huh.
He spent all of his money making this movie, which is probably now 12 years ago. Still can't get distribution for it. Shows up everywhere trying to sell it and trying. People come and do ghost stories at his house. But he's crazy. He's never done anything since. He's just still trying to get this movie seen.
One.
And it's not great. And one of the guys in it was just alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
And he, before every scene, he was like, hey, man, you want a boost? And I'm like, no, but I shouldn't do that. And after about a week into this movie,
you're
I was
like, fuck it.
Yeah,
I'll have some.
So I very unprofessional, but the whole thing, I mean, I was also...
At that point, you're like, there's nothing professional about this anyway.
It didn't really affect my performance.
I did a national commercial once, and it was shooting up in Mammoth.
Mm-hmm.
So they put us in a van in Hollywood and then drove us up to Mammoth, like me and the other cast members. Because I guess Mammoth is within a whatever zone,
oh,
the
is
union,
it
and
not
they can
KU?
They can road trip you there. They don't have to put you on a plane.
Yeah.
So we're on our way. We stop at a rest stop, you know, taking a leak. You know, and one of the actors had, like, a coffee mug,
mm-hmm.
which we all had, you know, we're drinking, like, coffee. And he's like, hey, you want some of this? And I was like, I have coffee.
So you want some of my coffee?
Yeah, that's what? I was like, what? No, I'm good. I have coffee. He's like, oh, no, it's not coffee. And I was like, and this is the thing he'd been sipping on already for hours, and we got picked up at, like, 6:30 in the morning. And I was like, what is it? He's like, oh, it's scotch and whiskey.
Scotch
and
mixed with
I
whiskey.
Said scotch and whiskey? Because scotch is whiskey.
Yeah, it is.
So you mix scotch with some other kind of whiskey?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. And I was like, no.
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 I don't.
On my worst day, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want it. Certainly not when I'm essentially, I know we're just driving up somewhere and we're not working until tomorrow, but.
There are some people who are super, super bright. Like you mentioned, Greg Proops, listen to his podcast, and he's so intelligent that he can just smoke 11 marijuana just to stop the noise
right.
of genius floating in his head so he can focus. Same thing with guys like Dan Harmon,
uh-huh.
who, you know, can drink a bottle of vodka just because they're going so fast that we couldn't possibly understand what they're saying, their logic. So they have to dumb themselves down to be on, like, my level.
Right.
I always, I'm like, God, I'm using 100% of my brain to keep up with these guys, and Proofs they're like, gotta knock it down to 25 so the commoners can understand my jokes.
Yeah, I listen to his podcast every week, and I'm always amazed by it. His because he talks for an hour to 2 hours on his own, you know, behind a table in front of an audience, makes his points, makes a lot of good funny jokes. And it, like, sometimes he repeats himself, but you know, even when he does it, it's mixed up enough that it's still fresh enough if you listen to him all the time. But how the fuck he does that high and drinking vodka? Like, he chugs vodka through the whole show.
And I've seen it in person, so I know it's not a bit. He does that to, cause there's too much noise in his brain, and that keeps him
amazing.
Focused.
Amazing. Yeah. He was referenced actually in You're the Worst this season.
I haven't seen them all. I've seen
up there's to the an episode where Desmond Borges's character meets a girl who's an actress who has
improv
an improv.
Girl. Yeah, yeah. Do they reference Greg Proops?
Yeah, they reference going. He references going to a party with her at Greg Proops's apartment or house or something.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing that.
Yeah.
That actress in the writing for Improv Girl is so fucking funny. It's like just her little quirky improv. It's like, oh my God. That's every Improv Girl. Yeah. Such well written.
I had
and well
fun
acted.
Too playing like a doctor who like thinks it's awesome that she does improv.
Yeah,
and I do improv with her and she does
the
mirror exercise. And I'm like, you can't fool me. Everything's backwards in the mirror.
Right, I remember that.
She's like, what the fuck? It was so much fun. But that must happen. Does that happen to you?
With
people who don't really do improv, who want to do improv, and
yeah, you know what? You know what happens even more? That's the weirdest thing, and I have to get used to seeing it. It's happening for forever. Ever since long form improv came on the scene, which is the only way now. I mean, if you're doing short form, what I do, I feel like it's kind of uncool. You have to do these long form, which is you tell a whole story over 45 minutes and you play it. That's the hip,
the
UCB
Herald
way. The hair. That's what's happening now. Because there's so many classes, and you know, UCB has a show every hour, starting at 6 o'clock to midnight Monday through Sunday. It's just there's constantly shows, and each show has six or more people, and so it's basically the old model was. You perform through level 1, 2, 3, and 4 of whatever class, and then 4 you graduate to the main stage. But there's only going to be the main team and the B team, and there's not everyone's going to be playing. That's the old way. So the new way is this, which you get a lot of people that are extremely confident on stage, but not good. So
interesting.
I'm used to people that if you're not good, you're not confident. But now you get people that are just like walk up there, like, and you're like, oh, this person is. They are in control of the room. They are so, and then they don't bring anything. And you're like, this is so weird to see a confident person not be good at something.
And are they like also not really yes anding stuff? Are they
just green? You know, they'll yes and, but they won't bring the extra. They won't match the confidence they have. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's taken me forever to get. Confident and good, and then you see someone walk up there like, hello, I'm gonna, and then they're okay. There's plenty of amazing people at UCB,
sure,
but I'm just talking about some people. It's just
that's a weird
thing to see.
Well, I like UCB and the Groundlings have become such the a channel for getting onto TV.
Yeah, it's what used to be go to acting class.
Yeah,
is now go to improv class. I feel like there's way more people.
Well, because there's no acting class that you can point to.
Yeah,
like outside of like the 1980s Carnegie Mellon graduating class that turned into Hill Street Blues. Yeah. That's the only one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and when I was, you know, applying to colleges and I applied to Carnegie Mellon and I visited it, that's all they fucking talked about.
Okay.
The Hill Street Blues guys. I'm like, but that's just one show.
Yeah.
Like, what are the rest of your graduates doing? Nothing. They're going to some other graduate school that's to be vets or something. You know, it was just weird. But acting class was never like a thing, really, yeah. that you could point to. Like, people wouldn't attend acting classes and pluck people out of it. But the Groundlings in UCB,
yeah.
they got the eyes of the most powerful people in television yeah. and film
yep.
looking to pluck people out.
They do.
And that's why that's happening.
And it's also, I mean, they're not really learning. I mean, I think improv, especially long-form improv, is really good for writing. Helps you understand, oh, different status people, conflict. It by doing it, you start to see story building, and I think it's great for writing and for acting, too. But, I mean, there's no scene study. There's no one breaking down something. There's no one there's none of actual the stuff right. that you need
so to do. So
it's
kind of
weird. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, when the Film Pig started as a stage show, that's what we were doing.
Yeah.
We were basically doing, we'd have an outline of a movie that we were parodying. We'd do the whole movie, like Footloose or whatever.
Right.
And I'd outline the story beats and then assign everybody characters, but we wouldn't write any dialogue
yeah.
when we started. And it was an interesting way to go because, I mean, I think unlike a Herald where it's like you're sort of just building and getting there,
mm-hmm.
you know, as organically as possible.
Yeah.
This was something where it was a familiar story
yeah.
that, you know, the audience coming to see it would be coming to see us parody some movie that they loved or hated or whatever. And sometimes it would go great. You know, and mm-hmm. other times, not so much,
yeah.
you know, so, I mean, but that was sort of the fun risk yeah. of it. And we did, that was another time that we would drink beer because it was a late night show. We had
Where'd
shows,
you do it?
Lots of different places, but we did it at the Hudson Theater.
Oh, yeah,
we
sure.
did it at one of the theaters on the Santa Monica in that theater row there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, was it UCB? I think it was UCB. When they first started,
right.
they were upstairs. They would do like improv while we were doing our shows, and sometimes there would be like jumping, and we would make jokes about the actors jumping around upstairs. But yeah, we did it there. We did it at the Off Ramp Theater, which sure. is no longer there. We did it all over the place, and then we did it at you know a couple comedy clubs
oh, yeah.
and cuz HBO was looking at
oh,
us
cool.
for the Aspen and all
that's
that
great.
They we didn't get in but we did do this. That's one thing that drove me nuts actually we had cuz we would go and we would kill and I'd be like why wouldn't you want us to go to Aspen
yeah.
and then there was always some reason your group is too big or
yeah.
you know we can't figure out how to put you
Have
into
they seen
our
the
program
state? There were 25 actors in the state remember the sketch show the state
it's
like 30 people.
I was at NYU when they started doing it in dorms.
Oh, wow.
And they called themselves the New Group before they changed their name to the State. Like all those guys. I did a production of The Cherry Orchard.
Right.
Where I had like two lines and Ben Grant
yeah.
had two lines. And we were backstage and joking around. And what I realize now after hearing him talk on multiple podcasts is he was probably tripping the whole time because he did a lot of acid. But,
oh, did he really?
Yeah. But at the time we were joking about doing like sense memory crack and stuff.
Yeah.
So we're doing sense memory crack before. Oh, sorry. That's Ron the cat.
Cat.
Hi, Ron the cat. And then I auditioned for Reno 911.
Yeah.
And I brought that up and he looked at me like I was an asshole.
Really?
I was like, he's like, I don't remember that. And I was like, now I realize why. He probably really didn't remember it. He's probably tripping. But anyway, I can't remember where I was.
Oh, I was going to say, there's a really good, if you want to see a fun show, there's a show called The Black Version. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Uh-uh.
Gary Anthony Williams, Phil LaMarr, a lot of great, hilarious African-American improvisers, and they will take a movie and they will redo the movie like you were saying,
mm-hmm.
but they will do it black. So
that's
you can
great.
See that around town. Jordan Black, Gary Anthony Williams, Wayne Brady, occasionally guest stars, Phil LaMarr, and some other people. I can't think of their names right now, but that's a great show.
That's Everyone hilarious. Show. Actually, the first show the Pigs did was Footloose.
Oh, yeah?
And my whole concept about Footloose was when they wrote it, because if you look at the structure of this movie,
yeah.
they wrote it for a black guy.
Huh.
Kevin Bacon's character is from the city.
Oh.
He's a fucking great dancer.
Right.
And he comes to this hick town, and for no discernible reason in Footloose, he's hated.
Wow.
If he was a black guy,
yeah,
that would have made sense.
Wow.
And he has to win over all the racists with his awesome dancing. So the first time we did it, I cast a black guy in the role.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
We got to have all that.
Because I was going to say, because you're no, I don't mean to embarrass you,
uh-huh,
but you are known worldwide for your Bill Cosby impression.
Which surprised. I cannot do anymore.
No, not anymore.
No, it, like, he killed it. He killed it with his creepy serial raping.
Yeah.
The last appearance on the Film Pigs of Bill Cosby was in, we did a parody of The Expendables,
yeah,
but it was all people who had currently gotten in trouble for, well, no, through the years, because we had, like, Roman Polanski, that guy from Seventh Heaven,
yeah,
Bill Cosby, and somebody else, I can't remember who. It was called The Sex Offendables. That was the last time I did Bill Cosby.
It was a great Halloween costume you might have seen online where, you know how the one costume is like, it's a fake guy behind you and it looks like you're carrying a baby, or there's like a fake torso attached to your back.
Oh, yeah,
They've done it for different reasons, like, is it, who, like, someone's carrying me, or,
right,
well, it's Cosby, and the fake hands that come out, there's a glass and some pills. So you dress as a girl, and the Cosby's behind you, handing you these.
Oh, that's great.
Terrible.
My favorite Halloween costume that I saw a picture of online this year was a guy who went as a CVS pharmacy receipt. It was just like a huge, long
a huge
receipt,
list,
yeah, of coupons.
20% off hair dye. And just like,
yeah, exactly. It's great stuff. Well, I guess we should wrap up your show.
Oh, I didn't know that we had started.
Oh, yeah, we've been recording.
That was the show?
We've been recording this whole time.
Oh, I had a great list of things to ask you.
You totally got Marc Maron.
I did, yeah, that's right.
You just started. Yeah. Because that's what he does. That was the whole reason I started doing this podcast.
Marc Maron.
Because I was listening to Marc Maron. And
I
sometimes
just discovered it a week ago.
Oh, really?
It's on a station in my car, and it's random, so I never know who is going to be, because it plays 24 hours, so I never know who I'm going to come into and listen to. But he's a great interviewer.
He is. And when I first started listening to it, because mostly, you know, now he's kind of branched out quite a bit to interview the president.
Yeah, really.
Pretty crazy to have the president come to a garage,
yeah,
to do a, it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first started listening, it was all comics. It was all just stand-ups and a lot of guys that he'd come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just like battle stories, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't know why I find stand-up comedy battle stories fascinating, but
yeah.
I mean, I did it a little bit in New York, sure, and quit because I didn't like stand-up comics. That was, yeah, the main reason.
And
the club managers were,
yeah,
horrible.
Yeah.
So it was just a depressing environment. So it's interesting to hear someone who's stuck with it for so long. But also in so many of his interviews, at least early on, like, he'd always get it back to him.
Yeah,
and I was,
yeah,
always like, it feels like he'd rather be the one getting interviewed.
Sure.
So that was what I was like, well, maybe I'll just be the guest every time.
I like it.
My guests will talk about
me. I'm glad
we
learned about you today.
Well, thanks.
All right. Thanks, man.